Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi, and welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Carmen DeVito.
And I'm Alice Marcus Creek.
And we are the ladies of Groundworks, Inc. We design and build gardens in and around New York City. And this show aims to bring some culture to horticulture.
Absolutely. So May I say... Ciao
bella, come stai? Anyway, today's cultural component is Italian, of course, because October is Italian Heritage Month, and this week's show features Italian Americans and the Italian garden traditions that have sustained so many families across so many generations. So we have two great guests today. In the first part of the show, we have Carlo Scissuta, who is the president of the Brooklyn Chamber of Commerce. He's going to tell us about some exciting events happening right here in New York City this month. And in the second half of the show, we have Maria Minniti, who is the founder and director of the Italian Garden Project. But before we get ahead of ourselves, we have to do our horticultural honor roll.
Beep.
Alice is making the sound effects today. Okay, so we usually have botanists and horticulturists and different kinds of plant people, but today we decided to honor two women who have been hugely influential to my gardening life and to my life in general. Maria Carmela Bellofatto and Rosina Cona.
Say it again.
Maria Carmela Bellofatto and Rosina Cona. These two ladies are my grandmothers. Both of them are gone now, unfortunately, but they still inspire me all the time. They were both amazing gardeners and cooks, as well as incredibly generous people. They were both quintessential Italian grandmothers. My maternal grandmother, Maria, raised me for a while in Italy as a young child, and I have such amazing memories of returning to her farm after moving to New York City and watching her work in her garden and in her kitchen. Now, that little lady who was like under 5 feet in her stocking feet even saved me from being bitten by one of her giant hogs one time. It was probably topped 400 pounds. That's a memory I will never forget.
That's one that I never hope in my arsenal.
Don't ever want to go there. And the memories of her I have are not just visual, but also olfactory. The smell of her pantry under the stairs was filled with the smell of cured soppressata and homemade olive oil, and it's so real that I can make myself recall it at will. It's just an amazing memory. And Rosina, my maternal grandmother, she was a very different kind of person. She had the carriage and demeanor of a field general. But she would literally give you the shirt off her back if you asked her. She was immensely proud of her garden and her home. And I remember on one visit, I was sort of being indecisive about what to eat, because that's the first thing they ask you when you get off the plane, as if you've come from like a war-torn country and you're starving. I was like, I don't know what I want to eat, Grandma. I'm just not sure. She appeared in the kitchen with a freshly butchered chicken and rabbit. So I had a choice of which I wanted to eat, you know? And then even after moving to the States, she lived with us for a while. She defiantly refused to adapt to modern conveniences, and she still washed all of her laundry by hand, as she'd done in the fountain house that was like right across the street from her house. So both of these women's, their industriousness, their generosity, and their loyalty to family inspire me all the time. So thank you, nonnas. And we're going to post, I'm going to post some pictures of these grandmas and a couple of their recipes from our family recipe book, on our Facebook page, later this week. So follow us to learn more.
But also, let's also give a shout out to the lunch that we
had. We have to talk about
this. As we were heading over to Williamsburg to do the show,
we went to this amazing place run by Mario Pesce from Torre del Greco. He's opened up a new place on 8th Street called La Panineria, amazing Italian panini.
And what Carmen said to me as we, you know, sidled up to the bar to order our sandwiches, she said, "This is what you get on the side of the highway.
In Italy."
In Italy.
Yes.
And it was delicious.
Yeah. And the right size. It wasn't like a monstrous sandwich. Well, we have another great Italian.
It's all about Italian food and gardening today.
Well, today, our first guest, as I said, is Carlo Scissuta. Carlo is not only the president of the Brooklyn Chamber of Commerce since 2012, but he's also an active board member of the Federation of Italian American Organizations, or FAIO for short. Carlo is a lifelong resident of Brooklyn and also served as the chief of staff for one of Brooklyn's most beloved leaders, former borough president Marty Markowitz, who was on our show a couple of years ago. He was great. He was great to have on the show. And Alice and I have been invited tomorrow night to the preview of the opening of the Italian Cultural Center called Il Centro, which is the first of its kind in the U.S. And so we've invited Carlo here to tell us a little bit more about it. Carlo, welcome to the show.
Buonasera.
Yeah. Ciao. So, Carlo, tell us a little bit about how this Italian Cultural Center came to be, and a little bit about the programs and events that are going to be hosted there in the future.
Sure. So, first of all, I should tell you that my parents are immigrants from Sicilia.
Yes.
So, it's a beautiful island. I hope the two of you have been there.
And
if
have
you
not.
Haven't, you should. Oh, my God. You've never been to Sicily.
No,
you
I haven't.
Must go.
No. It's on the bucket list for sure.
Okay, good. So, anyway, Il Centro will be the first of its kind community cultural Italian center in New York City. We have been talking about this at least for 20 years. The people who were there before me, some of who are still around, Jack Spatola, Nancy Sotile, a great group of people, had been talking about this with a guy who is deceased now, a Dr. Antonino Parisi, who was a community leader and whose dream was to have a center. And he and his estate are donating $1 million to name the center after him.
That's amazing.
And we've been fundraising for about 12 years. You mentioned my former boss, Marty Markowitz. He was a big part of this, and the city council, the mayor, the state senate, just a bunch of people. So what will it be? 45,000 square feet in the heart of Bensonhurst and Bath Beach. There will be a great open room with Italian exhibits. There will be a library of Italian culture. There will be an interactive information on Italian immigrants and Italy and their contributions to New York City. There will be a gymnasium so we could have soccer, where we could teach the kids about Italian soccer. We will have Italian cultural classes. We will have Italian language classes. So I'm not sure how fluent you ladies are, but if you're not, you can come there and we'll learn Italian together.
Oh, that's great.
Although I speak it, so it's fun.
Yeah, Carmen speaks it too.
I speak it, and I like to speak the dialect too, especially with my family. Then
which region's dialect?
Well, we're from Campania in Irpinia.
Sì, molto bello.
Sì. Molto bello. So it's
exciting.
Don't
get me started in Italian, and then I won't speak English anymore.
I know. We can have this whole conversation in
exactly,
Italian.
Exactly. And then, of course, we're going to have a kitchen where we will have Italian cooking classes. And we're going to get some great Italian immigrants from the community to do how to make meatballs.
How to make
pasta chissaide, if you know what that is in Sicilian. It's pasta with sardines.
Oh, yes.
How to make Italian meatloaf. How to make Italian pastas. I mean, just everything. So
I think
we'll
you need
that.
A gardening component, though, Carla.
We definitely need a gardening component, and I'm going to tell you why. Because once you get to the rooftop, and by the way, there's also going to be a swimming pool, a fitness center. So after you make meatballs and gnocchi and you eat them, you can go work out. But on the roof, which is this incredible rooftop with views of Coney Island and the Verrazano Bridge and all of Brooklyn and Manhattan, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, we want to have a rooftop garden. And that's where you guys will come in and help us plan this, which will be incredible.
We would love to do that. I'm so excited. And when I heard about the event, because I live in the neighborhood and I've been watching the process. You know, I've been watching it go up and up and be built. And there's built up so much excitement in the community, you know, and the community is much more diverse now than
it's
it was.
Look,
you know?
It's a great diverse neighborhood. I mean, we will have people of all cultures wanting to know about Italian culture.
Right.
By the way, the important thing to note is that FIAL is a great social service agency.
Yes.
So
yes.
All of our services are free of charge.
Yes.
Immigration, anything we do. And that's open, of course, to everyone. You don't have to be Italian to come to that.
Well, I can't believe New York doesn't already have
this. I know.
Neither can I.
It's unbelievable.
You know what's amazing about Italians? We are still the largest European ancestry group in the five boroughs.
Uh-huh.
We are the largest ethnic group in New York State.
Mm-hmm.
And we are the third or fourth largest ethnic group by pure numbers in New York City.
Right.
How do we, our mayor is Italian, our governor is Italian.
Yeah.
How do we not have an Italian center? Well, we will now, which is amazing.
Good.
And so, as we were saying earlier, October is Italian Culture Month, and there are some more, in conjunction with this preview tomorrow night, you're also promoting Italian Restaurant Week.
Yes.
Tell me about that, because I think there's some cannolis involved as well.
Oh, there's lots. So I'll tell you a couple of things. So first off, when I started at the Chamber 2 years ago, obviously as a Sicilian, I had to do something for my culture.
Yes.
So I decided, what about Italian Restaurant Week? And we started it as a fluke last year,
mm-hmm.
greatly successful. This is our second year. We have almost 50 participating restaurants in Brooklyn.
Phenomenal.
You can check them all out on our website, ibrooklyn.com. So we decided that instead of just announcing it, we would have a kickoff. So
right.
Tomorrow night we'll be doing a kickoff of Italian Restaurant Week. You'll get to taste amazing food and from about 15 different restaurants.
I'm so excited.
And Italian specials. It's going to be amazing. We will have cannolis from Villa Batti Alba, which is the most amazing pasticceria, I think, in America. That's just my opinion.
Yes.
But I'm right about it. The best cannolis.
I don't know. I might. There's also Rimini, you know, on Bay Park.
I like Rimini, but the Villa Batti is special.
It's classic.
Although I like Rimini.
Rimini's good, too.
I like Rimini, too. But Villa Batti is amazing. Anyway, so we're going to do this, and then we'll do a sneak peek of Il Centro. We'll announce Italian Restaurant Week. We'll listen to some music. And then, don't forget, Saturday is the Brooklyn Columbus Day Parade.
Right.
On 18th Avenue.
Yes.
Right.
Where we'll be marching on the avenue. And for the first time ever, we'll be ending the parade at Il Centro.
That's great. It's so exciting.
And then we'll be having a Villa Batti cannoli eating contest. Hungry for cannolis, folks, this is your chance.
I never get tired of cannolis.
Neither do I.
I just never do. So when will the Centro actually open to the public, do you think?
So we're realistically planning a January official opening. I mean, we're going to do a couple of soft openings.
Sure.
We'll get the kinks out of it. It's a new building, remember?
Of course.
But I think by January, programs and services of the Federation and Il Centro will be up and running.
So the Federation's going to kind of shift to the Centro.
Yep. So we're going to move all of our operations there. We still will have after-school programs in about a dozen schools.
Right.
In the area. but all of the basic operations of the organizations will be out of Il Centro.
And that makes a huge difference for an institution. Alice and I have worked for nonprofits in the past, and having a home base, having a permanent home base, we worked for institutions that had it and that didn't. And I think it makes a massive difference to know that you are, this is your place. This is always going to be your place. You can invest in it. Do you know what I mean?
I agree. Bricks and mortar. Bricks and mortar are amazing.
Right, right, right.
Well, Carlo, I'm so excited. I'm looking forward to meeting you.
Yes, tomorrow night will be fun.
I'm so glad that you were able to be on short notice for the show.
It's my honor. I appreciate you inviting me. I appreciate that you guys are talking about Italian culture, because it is truly an incredible culture and we should all be proud of it.
Thank you for all your work. It's going to be really exciting, and congratulations.
Yes, congratulations. We'll see you tomorrow night.
Mille grazie. Ciao e buona giornata.
No. Ciao, Carlo.
Ciao.
So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to get deeper into the Italian culture, into the Italian garden. So stay tuned to We Dig Plants.
National Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Hey, welcome back. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, and this is We Dig Plants. We are celebrating Italian Cultural Heritage Month, and we have an amazing guest with us to finish out our show. It's a woman named Mary Minetti. She's the founder of the Italian Garden Project, an organization dedicated to documenting and preserving the Italian garden heritage in America. We met her at the Garden Writers Symposium last month in Pittsburgh. And, of course, we formed a kinship with her, Carmen especially. So welcome, Mary. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm happy to speak with everyone today.
So tell us, what is the Italian Garden Project?
It's an organization I founded to basically shine a light on a lifestyle, an amazing lifestyle that's very relevant for today. Italian-born Americans who emigrated after World War II, folks who are often in their 70s, 80s, and 90s, who came here from a lifestyle very closely connected to the earth, from an agricultural lifestyle, where they survived on what they could grow, and they brought their amazing food and gardening traditions here, and they have a lot to teach us.
They definitely do, and that's... That's what struck us about your organization. Tell us about some of the work that you do and how you go about bringing these stories to the public.
Well, I basically seek out what I consider classic Italian-American vegetable gardens. Like I said, basically gardened by post-World War II immigrants that grew up with this lifestyle and just live it so naturally and beautifully here. And I basically go to their homes when they allow me and when they realize that I have a real interest in what they do. Many of them are so humble and so unaware of how interesting they are and how many skills that they have and how much knowledge that they have that other people need to know about. They're sort of skeptical of why I would want to learn from them and what really do they have to offer.
Right.
And when I, they're just so unconscious about the lifestyle that they lead and just sort of take it for granted, then think that everybody knows, you know, how to make soap from fats and oils. And
exactly.
Everybody knows when to plant rapini and all these.
And how to braid onions, right?
Right. Just so naturally and skillfully. Just everybody does this, but not everybody does. And it's really important that we learn from those that have this knowledge. And so I seek them out in any way I can. I ask, I just by word of mouth, and or I just walk the streets. Like I one very, very hot summer in Brooklyn, and just walked around and looking for the backyard that really, you know, had signs of the classic Italian American garden. You know, the grape arbors and the fig trees and the tomato plants, and just knock on doors sometimes and just
and you make videos, right? Like you film it and do little documentary things.
Right. I photograph. I often work with a professional photographer, and I often work with a professional videographer, or I just film myself, and I just ask them to talk about their gardens and show me what they do, you know, film them braiding garlic or making baskets from willow branches or planting or, you know, whatever they're doing, I want to learn, and videotaping them really is the best way to do that. And then I have a website that I use as sort of a repository for this heritage and load the videos and blog about them and share. That's, you know, how I can share what these folks know with other people.
Uh-huh. It's such a lovely, lovely sentiment that you're doing. You know, you're really bridging gaps.
Yeah, because a lot of times what I love about the project, and like instantly Alice and I were drawn to it, is because from one generation to the next, so much is lost. I know less than my parents.
Right.
My son knows less than me about the traditions. And you know, it just kind of happens when in the immigrant sort of dynamic. You know, the first generation really tries hard to keep up all the traditions and the language. And then, you know, it's sort of
lost.
It's lost a little bit. It's diluted. And what you're doing is you're doing an amazing service to to the nation and to so many families. And I just find it so fascinating. And as I was watching a bunch of those videos, as you said, the people are so humble. They're not looking for the spotlight. They're not making YouTube channels of themselves, you know, braiding garlic.
They barely will allow me to video them.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. Well,
but if they were 20 years old, they'd be doing YouTube videos.
Exactly.
Yes, they would. Well, I noticed too that there are a lot of couples.
Right.
A lot of them, husband and wife, working together. And there was one particular couple that really struck me as just adorable and also quite remarkable people, Tommaso and Tomasina. Like, they have the same first name.
Oh, I know. It's so cute. And we affectionately, their nickname is Machina and Machino. So instead of Tomasina and Tommaso, we call them Machina and Machino. So, yes, they
Tell us about them. They just seem unstoppable.
Oh, they have a wonderful... Yeah, wonderful garden. Their whole backyard, every inch is something is planted and growing in every inch of their backyard. Just really a small suburban, really urban backyard. It's, you know, you would never think that they could produce so much food on such a small lot, but people are amazed when they see what goes on in that backyard. And they really were the, after my grandfather, who was my first inspiration for the project, a turn of the century immigrant, but Tomasina and Tommaso came in the 70s from Calabria. And they, you know, are brought the traditions that they knew and really just are amazing. You know, I would often stop by because Machine is a close family friend and she'd often be in her garden planting or picking or in her basement kitchen cooking.
The basement kitchen.
And, yeah, the basement kitchen, and these incredible smells would be drifting out from the wonderful, you know, zucchini fritters that she was frying from the blossoms that she had just picked, or, you know, the eggplants that she had just stuffed, and other things. Like, you know, she's the one that taught me to make soap from the fats and oils that she saved when, of course, they made the dried sausages every year, and how to cure olives, and, you know, it just goes on and on with her that really, really inspired me to say, you know, these people are amazing. We have to let other people know about them and other people like them,
They're incredibly industrious. I mean, most of them had full-time jobs, and then they would also make these massive gardens, and anybody who gardens to eat knows how much work that is. It's not like an ornamental garden, which does require maintenance and care, but is much less labor intensive. I know from
this is Depression era, right? So to spend money on food that you can grow yourself, it's just pragmatism, you know?
They're super
My grandparents did the same thing, and they're from, you know, they were sharecroppers in Tennessee. But I know what you're saying. Like, I remember going with my grandparents to their community garden. They left the farm, and they went to Eastern Lansing, Michigan, to work on the car lines. But I would go with them to their community garden, and it was filled with Italians and then my grandparents, like, from the South. And it was just massive. And it was probably four times a week they were in the garden, weeding, watering, tending, harvesting.
What
did
they grow, Al? What do they
They grew everything.
Corn.
Collards, corn, you know, lettuce, tomatoes, like, you know, squash, zucchini, like, you name it. You know, it was the same stuff, and it was the same sensibility of, like, I'm going to do this for myself. I'm not going to pay somebody. I'm not going to pay money.
And taste mattered, too.
Taste, right.
The freshest. Coming from the South, as they did, and knowing what it's like to have fresh produce.
Right.
Like these Italian immigrants,
why should you buy something that sits on a truck that, is
And there's
shipped
a level
from...
of, I experienced it with my own family, Mary, and you tell me if you found this as well with your, your interviewees and the people that you feature. My grandmother would not eat any meat that she didn't personally grow and butcher. You know,
I would never eat a dead chicken, meaning that they wouldn't eat a chicken that was already dead
by
the door.
All her life, she only ate, she would never buy something from the butcher. Mm-hmm. She was extremely aware of, you know, how things should be and the freshness and everything. So
I need to tell one little quick story about Carmen's family. and this goes right to what you're talking about, Mary. And Carmen, I hope I don't embarrass you too much. I'll be gentle. Carmen went with her immediate family to Colonial Williamsburg several years ago, right? To have the kind of American Thanksgiving, like, you know, experience.
We didn't
right?
want to have lasagna for Thanksgiving again.
Yeah.
Right?
So they go to Colonial Williamsburg, and they're walking through all the like little tours, and they stop at one of the little
kitchen house.
And there's some like interpreter, you know, who's in dress and talking about the butchering. Carmen's mother slips underneath the rope, yeah, and she says, "You're not doing it right."
Oh my goodness.
And she went on to give a tutorial on how to do it. And she probably taught the woman a thing or two.
Oh, because my mom has butchered many an animal.
Yeah.
And,
I'm sure. Yeah.
And the interpreter kind of stepped aside and was like, okay.
Let this woman talk. You know?
Yes.
Really?
It was
probably knew more.
That's yeah. exactly.
So you all, besides the videos, you also have incredible stories that you've collected mm-hmm. that people have told. And I found that to be really, really great because there's so many stories in so many people's families, oral traditions, mm-hmm. and a lot of times right. people don't write them down.
Right.
Right.
And one of them really struck me, Mary, as just so touching and incredibly real. And I was wondering if you could give a short synopsis of it. It was called A Soldier's Garden by mm-hmm. Sal Crisanti. Can you tell mm-hmm. our audience a little bit about that story?
Sure. Yeah, I love that story, too. And I was so pleased when Sal sent it in. He's a website reader, and he shared a story about his friend, Andy Santestefano, who was of his parents were Italian immigrants, so he grew up in an Italian-American family. And he shared a story about his experience in World War II when he was an American soldier that was captured and taken prisoner. And he and the other prisoners experienced some very harsh conditions and were becoming malnourished until Andy began collecting the dandelions and wild onions and other wild edibles that he found out when they were forced to work out in the fields. And Andy remembered his mother foraging for these types of things and making them into salads and broth and soups. So he taught the other prisoners to collect them as well, and then hide them in their shirts and sneak them inside. And then they would secretly prepare them and eat them and the broth in their canteens. So that's how they survived their imprisonment in World War II. So that really shows how, you know, a knowledge of nature and the environment, we never know when, we're going to need it and when it will come in handy. And
he probably saved lives.
Yes.
You know?
Exactly. How would these prisoners have survived, without, and what healthy and nutritious things, dandelions, they were eating these really nutritionally packed foods and were thriving then and survived the war because of them. So it really makes you look on, that kind of knowledge, that really basic knowledge of foraging and things that are growing wild, with a lot more respect and admiration.
And he risked his life to do it. I mean, it's not like they were like, all right, if you find some greens, it's okay.
He was putting himself in danger.
Yeah.
Right. To survive.
And I love that story. There's so many other stories on the site that are like that, are like life changing.
So how long have you been with this, working on this project, Mary?
Well, actually, I first started giving tours of these gardens, after I visited Tomasina's garden, I would spend time there. I said, other people have to see these. So in 2009, I was on the programming committee for our local nature center, and I said, well, let's try giving some tours of these gardens as a fundraiser because, people, every time I bring someone in there, they're amazed and they want to see these gardens. So it started like that. I started giving tours in 2009, 2010. The tours became wildly popular, and I began to see that, there's a lot to these gardens, and there's so many, there's so much that people want to know about them when they're in them. They would see fig trees, growing in western Pennsylvania and say, how is this possible?
Right.
And so I started giving classes on fig growing. Just all of the different things that people that I saw people responding to, and really a sense of nostalgia. People were really, people that had grown up in this tradition, and whether it was Italian or, you know, a Greek grandmother that gardened, or a German grandmother that, you know, made sauerkraut, and they, it really brought them that sense of nostalgia for that experience of growing up, in, you know, in those traditions, and really looking at their ancestors and that way of life as in a different light, sort of as, wow, that's was so old school that it's now cutting edge,
right,
you know,
exactly.
That whole lifestyle,
right.
You know, and starting to right. see the relevance of it for, you know, what we're trying to get back to today. So, you know, all these themes started emerging. So basically 2011, I started doing it almost full time. And then the last three summers, I've done it full time now. It's really a passion of mine and really something I the more I do it, the more I want to do it. And the more I see there is to do, the
yeah.
more document, the more gardens I find to document, the more I want to multiply myself so that I can, you know, get out to all of these gardens before they're no longer there for us to have access to.
Right.
So
I see a book.
Yeah.
In the making.
So I'm thinking of ways you know, train volunteers to help me go out into those, into more gardens and document them, and expanding the project in lots of different ways.
Well, I think you need to have a show, Mary, a TV show on the Italian television
yes.
network. That would be amazing.
Yeah, well, you know, we've done our local PBS station in Pittsburgh did a short piece, and we're looking at maybe doing something on a regular basis.
Good.
Because, yeah, there's so much to learn, and there's so, you know, and people just love hearing the folks, you know, talk, that the wonderful accents,
yeah.
the nostalgia for that
yeah.
simplicity, that really humble, and yeah, they're very, very appealing characters I work with, and
oh yes,
and people would really enjoy getting to know them.
They're very expansive and generous. As I was describing
yeah.
early with my grandmothers, they were tough as nails,
yeah.
but they literally will, you know, give you anything. Anything
exactly.
that they have, you know,
yeah.
my parents have a huge garden. I've told you
mm-hmm.
about me. They're definitely of that generation, of that same,
right.
that same species, you know, and
right.
whoever visits them, the first thing they want to see is the garden. And then they leave with bags of,
exactly.
of produce, because
right.
they definitely grow more than,
yeah.
you know,
right.
more
That's
than they can
the-
ever use.
Right. Part of the enjoyment of the garden, I think, for them is sharing it, you know, having enough to share, you know, giving figs to people that never ate figs before, and,
yeah.
you know, really sharing and being generous is just part of the lifestyle as well.
Yeah,
and,
the pass-along the pass-along idea. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
My mother has a saying loosely translated into English, "You'll never starve at a poor person's house."
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
and she always said that to me. That was a point of pride for her family.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
You know, because no matter how poor my grandmother, they were never very wealthy, but no matter what, whoever showed up at the door was fed.
Uh-huh.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. So true.
And
I mean, sometimes the most humble homes come the most glorious food, you know, the most nutritious and simply but deliciously prepared foods too. I mean, that's what I'm finding. You know, it doesn't take a big gourmet kitchen or
no.
a chef's degree sometimes.
No. And the communal aspect of eating
exactly.
together is the most important thing.
Yeah. And you know, Mary, the three things that are always asked when you go visit relatives,
yeah.
what did you eat? You know, what are we about
right.
to eat, and what, you know, are we going to eat?
Yeah.
Like, you know,
exactly. Oh,
it's
all about food. That's
yeah.
for sure. It's all food first.
You touched briefly on the fig. Okay.
Yeah.
And that is like, mm-hmm. to me, that's the quintessential element of the Italian garden,
mm-hmm.
the Italian American garden, because to me that represents Italy. That's like the sunshine, the beauty, the sweetness, all
exactly.
the good aspects of Italian culture and gardens and fertility, everything. It symbolizes so much. And people want to grow them. And
right.
you've actually
posted some videos about from some of these gardeners about how to sort of coax along the young shoots and then also how to protect mm-hmm. them, right? Because mm-hmm. that's like a big right. thing that people want to know how to do.
Well, right, yeah, that's, right. They're so surprised that, like you said, that they even live in this region.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, they really, by all rights, should not survive in a northern climate, you know, this Mediterranean fruit. But they, like you said, they do represent the Italian-American experience, really, because they're, you know, a fruit transplanted from a warm climate, but because they've come with the immigrants that have the knowledge of the earth, and they've figured out how to make them survive and adapt and thrive, just like the immigrants themselves, I always say.
Yeah.
And and they've been grown, you know, it's like I said, when I'm walking around, you know, Brooklyn or, you know, other boroughs in New York, I can always spot, you know, where an Italian lived, because that fig tree was there, and it really marks, you know, a symbol. But it also, the Greeks and the Middle Eastern immigrants brought the fig shoots with them as well. So it's important to a lot of different cultures.
Uh-huh.
And but they've grown, you know, in the Northeast for a long time.
Yeah.
At first, when they were first planted, it was really necessary to protect them. And, you know, from the elements, but then we were sort of lulled into complacency in the last several decades, thinking that they could survive without protection, and they often did. But in the last winter, terrible for fig trees. It was just brutal, and so many of them died back. And at least the top growth, but they are resilient trees, and they came back from root growth, the majority, really almost all of them.
That's amazing.
And, it is amazing how hardy this tree, once it's well-rooted and well-established, how hardy it can be and how resilient. And so people are, eager to reestablish those trees, but often they grow in bush form, you know, when they die back like that. And small backyards don't have room for all that.
They do take up a lot of space.
They're wide.
I have to say, we have a client that has a couple that are probably more than 10 years old at this point, 10 or 15 years old. Last winter, we, you know, it took a long time for them to, and we protected them. We wrapped them.
Oh, you did. Oh, didn't they survive?
And they survived, but it was at first, like in April and early May, there was no sign of life. And I was just there last week, and there were ripe figs on the tree. Not a lot, but
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
I mean, you know, the fact that they made it through this particularly brutal winter, is astounding. And what's amazing about figs too is that they're so easy to grow. First of all, you only need one tree,
mm-hmm.
unlike a lot of other fruits that you need multiples, you know, to produce fruit. And they are pest and disease free.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know any Italian or any other person who's grown fig trees that does anything but prune them. We don't even water them once they're established, Mary. They literally need nothing.
They are very hardy. I mean, for being a Mediterranean fruit tree, they are very hardy locally. It's amazing. And once they're established, like you said, it's just they aren't problematic.
No.
Except they grow. They like to grow.
Yeah.
And you have to keep them under control often in small backyards, or keep them from growing in bush form if you prefer that they grow
in a tree.
In a tree form. So you need to dig those shoots, you know, that the suckers that come up. But those wonderful, because then you can make those into new trees and share them with someone else. So there's the tree produces in a lot of ways. So it's a great tree to have, and I don't think as many people grow them as they should, and that's why I give my fig growing class is called Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About Growing Fig Trees. And I held one in Brooklyn. We had a lot of fun. I mean, in the Bronx,
yes.
In September.
Yes.
We had a lot of fun, and I hope to do some more in the spring for anybody that wants to know.
Well, we have to bring you. We have to bring you down to the new center, the Italian Cultural Center, in the spring. I'm gonna help make that happen, Mary, because I think your work, your videos, all the stories, and also your knowledge, I think, would be an incredible asset to put in their collection and to share with people. And I would love for you to share. We're unfortunately come to the end of the show, but I would love, because this is a labor of love, and this is something that you do, a gift that you're giving to the world, how people can support you, support the site, and contribute and help to pay for all these things that you do. Can you tell a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, I have a website, and it would be great if people would visit it and see for themselves and learn a little bit more about the project. It's www.theitaliangardenproject.com, and where you can sign up to be a subscriber and get on our email list and get email updates about events and classes that I hold. That's primarily the way I support the project right now, with the classes and the events I have. And I've had several in the New York City area. I've done cooking classes at Eataly, based on Italian, with food from Italian gardens that the Italian gardeners share with me, and we've cooked and prepared in different ways. And like I said, my fig growing classes that I've done, and hope to add more. So also, I hope to soon organize, like I said, a volunteer corps in New York and Pittsburgh and a few other metropolitan areas, so that we can get people involved in the project like that, and we can train them to help, grow the project by becoming volunteers that go out and actually use the Smithsonian documentation process to document more gardens.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I just wanted you to talk really quickly. We have very little time, but one of your gardens is profiled right in the Smithsonian, one of your stories.
Right. Yes. The Garden of Giovanni and Maria Macchioni of Sorkley, PA, a suburb of Pittsburgh, is now part of the Archives of American Gardens in the Smithsonian.
That's fabulous.
First Italian-American garden archive there. So I'm very proud of that and very pleased that that has happened. So we want to get out there and document as many gardens as we can while we still have a chance, because I think we'll be very sorry once we don't have access to them, because there's so much to learn from them.
And also, people can contribute, right? On your site, people can make donations to help support your work. Is that right?
Yes, they can. And we're updating the site. We've had some technical difficulties, but we're updating the site. And there is a way to support the work at this point until we get some more products and things available for purchase. It's just sort of a way to help us at the ground level. It would be wonderful to get that kind of support through the site.
Well, I want to tell people, learn from Mary, take one of her classes, support her work, and you too can have the Italian Breakfast of Champions. I'm going to tell you what that is. It is a slice of crusty bread spread with a fig split in half. That's what I would have for breakfast every time I would visit my grandparents. Of course, the figs there were like the size of a small child's head, you know. But this is the kind of knowledge that you can do, you can gain and create a little bit of beauty. So please visit her website, theitaliangardenproject.com, and help support her amazing work. Mary, thank you for being on the show. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you both for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you, Mary, for all your work. It's lovely.
Thank you. You're welcome.
You've been listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. Today our show was engineered by Liz. Woohoo! Jack Inslee is away. Girl power in the studio. Thank you so much for listening. We're going to put links to the Italian Garden Project on our Facebook page, Groundworks Inc. We Dig Plants. And I hope you guys get to enjoy a cannoli at the
Cultural Center.
At the Cultural Center soon. Thanks for listening.
Happy gardening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.